Hello and welcome to the Inside Elland Road podcast from the Yorkshire Evening Post. This is episode 97. I'm Graham Smith and I'm joined by Joe Urquhart to talk about the Whites as Christmas approaches and West Ham are about to make a visit to Elland Road. First time the clubs have played each other since the 2011-2012 season, I believe, when they were in the Championship. Lots of games at the minute are bringing up kind of old historic rivalries, and it's all starting to feel a bit festive as well, isn't it, Joe? We're getting into the festive season when everyone says games come thick and fast. Do they come thick and fast though, or are they just at a fairly regular rate that's in no way as intense as the Championship?
Yeah, I think the Championship's got it hard. Well, the Football League in general have got it harder, haven't they? But no, it should be a good period. I think if we were reflecting on the last few weeks, I think Leeds would have taken 4 points from Arsenal, Everton and Chelsea. So going into this busy, thick and fast festive period, as you sum it up in the football cliche, I think there can be lots of positives and a couple of games coming up, a couple of home games before the big one. So hopefully they can get some positive results.
Yeah, before that visit of Burnley on the 27th. Have you sent your list to Santa Claus, Joe?
No.
Well, don't leave it too much later, because obviously it's a busy time for him. What would be the perfect money can't buy Leeds United gift that a certain someone could get Joe Urquhart?
Leeds United beating Manchester United 5-0 at Old Trafford would be top of my Christmas list, I think.
Well, I would have said fans being back in grounds, but if you want to go, if you want to go with that, that's actually, you know what, it'd be very interesting to know how many Leeds fans would trade being at the game and seeing Leeds lose for a 5-0 win and you can't go in to see it.
I think you'd take the 5-0 win, 100%. It's not even a question. Shut up. That's not even a question.
It would be remarkable, wouldn't it, a 5-0 win?
As good as it would be to be going to a game again, watching Leeds lose at Old Trafford in person. On the other hand, you can sit at home with your feet up and watch Bielsa destroy Ole Gunnar Solskjaer 5-0. I think there's only one winner there. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Leeds fans would have to get in touch, but I think there's one winner there for me.
Are you expecting any Leeds United gifts this year, like a new Jermaine Beckford duvet cover or anything like that?
I haven't asked for anything. I got a really cool Tony Yeboah picture a couple of Christmases ago from my other half, which was sort of like a cartoon graphic of his goal against Wimbledon, and it sort of like says it with all the commentary alongside of it. That was quite cool, but no, I haven't got anything planned up. We'll see, won't we, when Santa's been.
I am surprised. Given Andrea Radrizzani's reputation for maximising revenue streams and how decent Leeds have been in terms of coming up with commercial ideas, I'm really surprised that they haven't yet started selling Bielsa experience packages where fans could go and experience 25 minutes of murder ball for, 500 quid. Obviously Bielsa wouldn't do it himself, but you could have speakers set up either side of the pitch that pumped in the noise of him yelling, move, move, again, again.
There's probably a large risk of death to a large portion of football fans in that, though, isn't there? So maybe that's why they've erred on the side of caution. I know if I did 25 minutes of murder ball, I'd be in serious trouble. So
I think we all would, but just to say you've done it, it's a bit like a bungee jump, isn't it? You think... My retinas could detach. You think that when you do a bungee jump. Well, your lungs could potentially detach doing murder ball. I think there'd be people who'd pay it 500 quid to do murder ball under genuine murder ball conditions with his coaching staff and Benoit barking at you and throwing balls in at you. And it'd be even better if you could get Rafinha giving you the runaround and Stuart Dallas pelting past you at full speed.
They could set up like a leaderboard for how long each fan lasts as well.
3 minutes. Congratulations, you're top of the leaderboard. So let's talk actual football then. Chelsea at the weekend at Stamford Bridge. It wasn't ideal, but it also wasn't one to be ashamed of, given the summer spending at Chelsea, given the individuals that Frank Lampard has at his disposal, an abundance, an embarrassment of riches in an attacking sense, and also given that Leeds did go ahead with that fantastic goal, superb pass from Calvin Phillips. It's funny, when I spoke to Dominic Matteo this week to do his column, he said he had to check twice to see who it was played the pass from the left wing for Patrick Bamford to run in and score. And I did as well in the ground. I had to turn around and check who it was played the pass, because it was just unexpected to see Calvin Phillips pop up as a left winger and play that pass with his left foot, which was inch perfect.
It was, and he literally just had a little glance and he put it in the perfect spot. And I suppose that's the quality of Calvin's passing, isn't it? There's probably few players that could sort of play that pass to... you do wonder how many times he'd have to be there again to find that exact pass, because it did seem to find Bamford in sort of his stride. I mean, what would you give him? 2 out of 10? 3 out of 10 times? I don't know.
Wow, harsh.
Well, I just think, like, the way that, like, when you look at the camera angle from behind the goal, the sort of the margin of error for that pass is not, you know, I don't know, maybe I am being super harsh, but it was like the perfect pass at the perfect time. And Bamford's finish was really cool. And I think the way that he took that was sort of a sign of his confidence as well at the moment. Would you have said that he'd have done that over a year ago? Would he have panicked and shot early? Would he have taken too many touches? You know, all that. But I think it's a sign of the times and the development just between the two players, really, for that goal. But yeah, generally, I thought, probably agree with what you say. I thought Chelsea were the superior on the day, and I don't think it was any shame in being outclassed by a team who spent a ridiculous amount of money in the summer.
I don't think you were being harsh, by the way. I was just trying to initiate some kind of Leeds United pylon on Joe Urquhart for besmirching Calvin Phillips. So it started perfectly, and then it got a whole lot less ideal. Robin Koch, who... There were lots of rumours before the game that he was going to be out injured. But he was there, and he started the game. And we know now where those rumours have come from, because he injured himself against Liverpool, has managed to play 11 Premier League games, played 3 games for the German national team in 6 days. Leeds were very, very keen to point that out when they released the news of Koch's knee injury after the Chelsea game. But they've been managing his fitness. So he will have missed training sessions. And if somebody had got hold of a bit of information that said he'd missed training before Chelsea, it didn't mean that he wasn't going to play against Chelsea. It was just indicative of the fact that he has probably been missing training sessions as Leeds have nursed him through this period. But Olivier Giroud fell on his leg, clumsy, and it's exacerbated the damage, and it's brought forward a surgery that Marcelo Bielsa says was always inevitable. He was always going to have surgery at some stage on the knee. Quite remarkable, isn't it, that a player has been able to play at that level for that many games, that many minutes, and play as well as he has while nursing a knee injury that was going to necessitate surgery.
Yeah, and credit to him. I'm sure the easy option would have been for him to just say, no, I don't want to, you know, play on, I want to take the surgery. But obviously, according to Bielsa, he wasn't in any pain or anything like that. It was just sort of waiting for this trigger moment, weren't they? So it's kind of remarkable that he got through so many games that he did. But at the same time, like you say, it's a real shame, because if it's happened in the Liverpool game, what a stroke of bad luck that is as well on your opening debut for your new club after a big summer move. And yeah, it's obviously, it wasn't an ideal scenario for him to go off after, 10 minutes or so, and then for Diego Llorente to get thrown on, who, as Bielsa said, was lacking some serious match minutes. Thought he did okay, but very, very difficult game to come on and try and, you know, leave an impact and get up to speed when you haven't played for 3 or 4 months.
A baptism of lava, I called it, because you're up against, I mean, obviously Chelsea lost a player to injury as well in the first half, when Ziyech went off, but they just bring on Pulisic. And for me, what it looked like throughout the game was that Chelsea were so good and so comfortable on the ball that Leeds could try and press, but Chelsea would just run around them. So the ball would go into Christian Pulisic. He would control it perfectly. He would dart forward to bring his marker with him and then turn the corner and spin round and beat the marker with his skill or with his pace. And then he's in behind and then there's space. And Chelsea just seemed to know, not only create space, but know where it would be when they were running with the ball. Kante was sensational in the midfield. And after a first half, it was Leeds definitely played their part in it and looked dangerous down both flanks at times. Chelsea really began to turn the screw in the second half, and Thiago Silva was running the ball from deep at pace at the age of 36. Just really, really good footballers playing really, really well. And Leeds just looked a bit lost at times. We've spoken to Matthijs Glick this week and spoken to Bielsa as well, and they've described some of the problems they had, including not stopping the first pass to Thiago Silva, not cutting him off at source. The press wasn't quite right. And so the way Glick described it to me was it was like a domino effect. If you miss the first one, then the next person's late, and then another person's late. And so, you know, you're kind of out of shape. Players are having to try and catch up and cover for others' mistakes or others being out of position, and then the press is kind of gone, essentially, and Chelsea are up in the final third. It was just a tough, tough game. And I still think that Leeds can take a measure of credit from it because they stuck in there, and Ilan Meslier was a big, big part of that, keeping them in the game, keeping it 2-1 for so long. And it still could have all been so different had Jan Poveda had a cynical bone in his body when he was kicked by Ben Chilwell in the area, or had VAR decided, actually, the laws of the game say that if you are kicked, then it is a foul. But he ran on, took a shot that was saved. That chance was gone. And then with Leeds pressing and trying to rush up the field, Chelsea win the ball, counter-attack through Werner, and Pulisic taps in to make it 3-1. So they hung in the game, Joe. Even though Chelsea were that good, Leeds still hung in the game.
Yeah, I think Frank Lampard spoke a little bit about it afterwards, but they obviously opted to try and fight fire with fire, didn't they? And I think the stats reflect that, the physical stats, and that's what Bielsa was talking about yesterday, that Chelsea exerted, I think, the most physical attributes generally around the field that they had done all season, and that was to match Leeds, and I think they actually outran them in the end. And it's remarkable because Leeds still have more possession. It was just, I think, like you said, once you miss that first press, but then also you're sort of talking about Leeds not being firing on all cylinders on that press at the front, when you then combine that with the individual sort of attributes that Chelsea players have and the ability to beat their men and get past their individual markers, that's when you sort of start having a problem, isn't it? Because then you're asking other players to drag away from their markers, you're leaving a free man, and that's a lot about what Calvin Phillips and I think Glick was talking about, and Phillips obviously identified Kante and basically said he was just everywhere and he looked like he hadn't broken a sweat. He was just staring at him going, how's he doing this, you know? So, and yeah, I think just not a wake-up call, but just a sort of a reality check of the difference in ability you sometimes maybe get for what you pay for. But at the same time, also a tip of the hat to how good and how well Bielsa has coached this team to be almost matching these players who are sort of world-renowned for an extended period of time.
Yeah, you do have to remember that Calvin Phillips has played 11 Premier League games. Matthijs Glick has played 11 Premier League games. Kante is a World Cup winner and a world-class footballer. And whilst there's the potential for some Leeds players to possibly get on that level at some point in the future. You just have to recognise sometimes where you are and where your opposition are. But I think the encouraging thing is that Leeds know where they went wrong. So they know that they can work on it, and they still cause Chelsea problems. Interesting press conference yesterday. We'll talk about Llorente shortly, but Marcelo Bielsa was asked by Adam Pope what they could have done better against Chelsea, and he went into an extremely long, detailed explanation of exactly what they could have done better, and it was really, really interesting. I mean, it is fantastic when he goes off on an answer like that. It's absolutely brilliant for journalists. I think it's great for fans as well, because it's really instructive and educational. And it, you know, I often think, and I'm going to write a little bit on this for tomorrow's YEP. I've lost count of the amount of times fans have said to me to ask a manager, do they work on set pieces? Has he worked on set pieces? Yes, is the answer. He's been working on set pieces for 2.5 years, but they still haven't got it right. They still haven't fixed the problem. They still haven't found the tool, as Bielsa said, to solve the problem. And it's at both ends, really, set pieces. Leeds don't look anywhere near as dangerous from set pieces as they should, and they look in an awful lot of danger at the other end when the opposition swings a corner in or a free kick in. And it's a problem. But Bielsa was kind of saying, these are not problems that you can fix between Chelsea and West Ham. You know, these are things that we've been working on for the longest time. But he was obviously in a mood to give expansive answers. When you compare some of his press conferences, this is where I'd absolutely love a one-to-one with him. I'd love to know what the difference was yesterday. And there was a press conference earlier in the season where he was maybe with us for 6 minutes, a pre-game press conference, and every answer was kind of one line, and he was just giving away nothing. Yesterday, he was giving chapter and verse. I mean, he was almost giving away too much on what the issues are for Leeds, and almost like a blueprint of how to make life difficult for Leeds. And then, of course, later in the press conference, Mark Walker of PA, it came round to his two questions, and his first was, have you decided who will play at centre-half? Because Bielsa had revealed Llorente, as some fans expected, pulled up when Chelsea scored that third goal because he suffered a muscular issue, and he'll be out for at least 2 to 3 weeks. And with Robin Koch having surgery this week on his knee and being out for 3 months, it brings a problem to which Bielsa finds solutions. And he suggested he could play Ayling or Phillips there. And when he was asked if he decided which one, and he said, you know, Ayling could play there, Phillips could play there. And Mark said, are you going to keep West Ham guessing? Bielsa looked confused, as if, what's he suggesting here? Is he suggesting that I'm playing some kind of mind games with West Ham before the game? So then his answer was, Rodrigo will come in for Llorente, the 11 will be, and then he just reeled off the team. And you could see, I don't know if when you watch the press conference back on LUTV, you'll probably just see speaker view, so you'll just see Bielsa. But when you can see the kind of gallery view, you could see all the journalists kind of laughing and Leeds media staff kind of mock exasperation. I think it's absolutely brilliant. I think it's just what a measure of confidence in your team and your players that you're quite happy to give your opposition 2 days head start and say, this is the team you should be preparing to face. These are the specific individuals that I will be using, instead of giving them an hour notice like most teams do. I'd love to know, maybe it's one to ask him after the game or next week, why does he do that? Why is he happy to do that? It's fascinating.
Yeah, there was some suggestion that it's quite common for sort of head coaches in South America and Spain and other places. I think there was someone mentioned the Atletico Madrid named their team the night before a Copa del Rey final with Real Madrid and still won. So it's probably just born out of a full belief in his team and his idea, and the fact that maybe he doesn't think that it will really impact that much, because when it comes to the actual game day, it's how his side imprint their idea, his ideology on the game, and how, you know, that how well they play. if they have an off day, it doesn't matter if they know that who's playing, does it? It comes down to individual errors or et cetera, et cetera. So I just think it's born out of a full belief in his system and his team, and this is what we've got. Come and beat us.
And also, maybe it's just a very fanciful notion that you can spring a surprise in this day and age. When you know, if you look back at the Spygate presentation, when Bielsa showed that they knew all the possible formations these players had played in, they knew everything about the player, who likes to play on which foot, who likes to drive in from the touchline, blah, blah, blah. They know everything. They've watched everything. Everything has been examined in minute detail. And it's not just Leeds. I'm quite sure other teams do it as well. And you know generally who you're going to face. You know, if it's not, as Bielsa said, West Ham have kind of two players per position in attack who are of similar quality. So you're kind of expecting one of those two to play. It's a small group with the Leeds team. You know, how often have we got the Leeds team right? Might not always get the formation right or where Stuart Dallas is going to play. But you generally can predict the lineup to within maybe one or two mistakes. There's very rarely a huge surprise. And we also know, after 2.5 years, exactly how Bielsa is going to play on Friday night. We know what Leeds will do when they have goal kicks. We know what they'll try and do when they have throw-ins down the left. They'll try and play that one-touch football to try and break through the press. You know they're going to play on the front foot. You know they're going to press West Ham, and they're probably going to create chances. These things are not a secret. He has one plan. It's plan A, and plan B is doing plan A better. So maybe we are just a bit naive in suggesting that, you know, managers keeping other managers guessing or pulling off a bit of a shock selection is actually going to have any effect whatsoever on the game.
Well, Frank Lampard did it last week. He was asked if Giroud was going to start against Leeds, and he said, well, I'm not going to name my lineup. So I don't know, maybe it's just a thing here. I haven't really thought about it that deeply, to be honest. Maybe it's just a, we'll try and just keep us, we don't want to give the opposition any slender advantage. We want to keep everything to ourselves to the last possible minute where it's an hour before the game. I don't know. But like you say, how much that actually, you know, impacts, unless there's a late injury or someone pulls up in a warm-up. I think a lot of teams generally know. I think after Giroud scored 4 in midweek, I think a lot of people would have been pretty, it would have been a pretty safe bet to say he was going to start against Leeds. Maybe it was just Lampard trying to plant that seed of doubt, but against Bielsa, it's not like he won't have watched 3,000 hours of Tammy Abraham playing football, will it? Or Giroud, you know, from when he was at Arsenal, etc. So, yeah, I don't think there's probably no means to it anymore.
So, the team news means that Rodrigo comes back in. Ayling will shift from right back to centre-half. Dallas will shift to right back. Alioski will stay at left back. Phillips in front of the back four. Click in the box-to-box midfield role, and Rafinha right wing, Harrison left wing, Bamford up front, Rodrigo in behind him is what we're expecting. I think everyone will welcome the return of Rodrigo. Even in that defeat against Chelsea, it looked to me like he gave them a presence in attacking midfield that they just simply hadn't had until he came on, because when the ball goes to him, it sticks, and he uses it well, and he moves it well. And he's a nightmare to track. He's an absolute, if you're man marking Rodrigo, you have got to be on your toes, because he doesn't stop moving, moves into great positions, still manages to find space. I know we've talked about it before and talked about Pablo doing it. He is really good fun to watch. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing him and Rafinha in the same lineup.
Yeah, I think I definitely think that the last 20 minutes, like you say, I think Bielsa said it as well. Yesterday that was sort of their best spell of the game attacking wise, and there were a couple of moments where I think there was one where he tried to feed in Bamford in the box and it was just a little bit too far for him, and that's the kind of little magic that he provides. But it certainly felt like Leeds were missing that sort of Rodrigo or Hernandez figure, just to unlock like a defence or create that pass or find that man out wide who's in space, and obviously Dallas is in there you'd say he's a bit more engine room than Guile, and obviously Click has been very, very, very good this season. But yeah, I think him coming back into the lineup will just give Leeds something extra in attack, and hopefully it means that, you know, Bamford can sort of get a bit more free as well, because I felt like he was a little bit isolated on Saturday at times. Obviously took his goal really well, but other than that, didn't have too much apart from a shot over the bar. So fingers crossed he can sort of come in and replicate the form he started to show before he had to, unfortunately, step away.
And I wonder if it might help defensively as well, having somebody so mobile coming in to play in that area to try and help Bamford with the press. Matthias Click, that's another thing I talked to him about this week, the press and the first people, him and Bamford being the first people on the scene more often than not. I think it would be quite nice to play some of the interview with Click, because he said some really great stuff. His story at Leeds is a really interesting one, because he's gone from, in his words, the bomb squad, fourth choice for a midfield role, to one of the first names on the team sheet every week and an ever-present. It is quite remarkable, really. There was some really nice quotes came out of Bielsa a couple of weeks ago about how Click could play in any of the best teams in the world. And that kind of... we talked about that with Click, and he admitted it was nice to hear, but there were some unintended consequences for him the next day in the dressing room. And really interesting that Bielsa doesn't take credit for Click's development, when everyone in the world says Bielsa has transformed Click, and Click says it himself, but Bielsa says the credit belongs to Victor Orta for finding him, it belongs to Click for what he's put in, and it belongs to luck, because it was only luck that kept him at Leeds when Bielsa first came in and asked him to play centre half and didn't really see him as a midfielder. So I spoke to Click this week, and we'll play a little bit of that interview now. I asked Marcelo about you about a week ago, and he talked about it being by luck, not because of anything he did, that you stayed with Leeds, because you got that chance in pre-season due to injuries, he said. Can you remember how you felt at that time, and were you close to leaving Leeds, or were you determined to stick it out? How were you feeling?
yeah, it was a long time ago, but yeah, I was thinking of leaving, obviously, because I was in the last group, and I was in the bomb squad. I was I knew it's gonna be hard, but I just didn't give up. I told to myself that if I don't make it, it's gonna be hard. So I just did everything I could to be there, and obviously with the injuries, I was lucky as well, and here I am.
What were your initial impressions of Marcelo?
I knew it's gonna be good couple of years in Leeds, because he changed the whole club, and the way he wanted to play football suits me, and I wanted to play here and for him. That's why I gave everything what I could, and on the training pitches, and try to prove him wrong, that I shouldn't be in the group two or group three, and I should be with the first group, and I made it.
when he says that you have the ability to play for any of the best teams in the world, how does that make you feel, and is that something that you yourself believe?
Yeah, maybe when I would be 22 years old, then maybe. Yeah, but I'm just happy that I'm being here and playing in Premier League, because that was my dream and that was my goal. And obviously, it's nice when a manager says stuff like this, but on the other hand, the next morning in the dressing room was fun of me as well. But yeah, doesn't really look like I'm moving anywhere. So
does he ever tell you things like that, you know, on a personal level, or is it just when he's dealing with the press that he talks about his players like that?
No, he told me a couple of things similar when he had like a individual meeting before the games, when he analyzed my game, and I know what he think of me, and I know what he expect me to do, and I'm trying to do everything what he wants, because as I said, I enjoy playing football for him, and it's a good way of playing football, and I don't want to say right one because every manager can have his own way, but I enjoy playing for him.
That was Matthias Klick. Great guy to interview because says exactly what he thinks and has the intelligence to articulate his thoughts very well. We talked about West Ham with him as well, and that'll be in tomorrow's YEP. He's predicting a very similar game to Leicester. He thinks they're going to play exactly the same as Leicester did and try and hit Leeds on the break with Bowen. So Leeds are going to have to get the first goal, aren't they? That's going to be quite important.
Yeah, I think a lot of times, the first, although the last game being the standout, that when Leeds score first, it generally sets them up a lot better. I think they find it very, very difficult once teams go ahead against them and they sit in. We definitely saw that in the Championship, and we've certainly seen that in a few Premier League games. Teams who have sort of decided they were going to surrender the possession and utilise their attacking threats in the form of pace or the wingers or whatever. So I imagine it'll be very similar, and I think he'll be right in his prediction that Leeds will enjoy a lot of possession. So it's going to be up to Leeds to turn up, break West Ham down and make sure that they're alert at the back. Obviously, we're expecting Ayling to go back into the middle. Was very, very good against Aston Villa the last time he played there. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes again there, and obviously Dallas reverting back in there, and hopefully Rodrigo can provide that little bit of spark. And it would be nice to see Hernandez back in the squad. Obviously been away for a few weeks. Bit of a cloud lingering over him at the moment after his sort of absence against Crystal Palace and then his injury. So hopefully we'll see him back in the squad. And Jamie Shackleton, who every time he seems to keep sort of getting a spot or a nice run, gets a little injury and it puts him out. We definitely saw that in the Championship. So fingers crossed there's enough there for Leeds to get a win. But we've seen West Ham this season. They've been pretty defensively resolute, and David Moyes seems to be doing a good job there. I think he was very mixed messages from the fans when he went back there, but you can't knock his start this season.
No, they have had a great start, and they'll be. I think they will be like Leicester. I think they'll play the smart game against Leeds, or they'll look to. Interesting to see how Declan Rice performs in a game where Calvin Phillips is featuring, because a lot of the talk will be about those two kind of vying for a place in the England squad in front of the defence. Interested to see how Bowen does as well, and see if his game has improved since playing among better players and playing against better players. And also very interested to see if this is finally the time that Moyes unleashes Benrahma. Because if there's a game that you really want pace and ball-carrying ability, it's this one. And Benrahma has had very few minutes so far. He's kind of been eased in. As they eased Bowen in, they're easing Benrahma in, a player who there's lots of talk about Leeds liking him in the summer until they went in other directions. Always a good player to watch, like exciting. And this is one thing about the Premier League, I guess, that we shouldn't take for granted. We are watching week in and week out some really good footballers.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, it's every week. It doesn't matter who you face. There's always threats, and that's just sort of, it comes with the nature of being in the Premier League. You know, people like Mikel Antonio, who we're not sure if he'll feature yet. Obviously, David Moyes is due to speak today. Is probably one of West Ham's sort of biggest signings in the last few years, a real threat on the break, and is probably sort of the ideal man to have up front against Leeds, similar to the way that Vardy was for Leicester. So they always have threats, and it's just the nature of the Premier League. And it was interesting that Bielsa sort of name-checked a few yesterday. And, you know, Pablo Fornals, who's been really good. Manuel Lanzini's still there. He's quality, and he hasn't been able to get into that team on a regular basis. He scored an absolute thunder, etc. at, I won't continue that word, but at Spurs a few weeks ago when they had that phenomenal comeback. So it doesn't matter who you face. You can always say, oh, it's only West Ham, but they've all got real quality, and that's the nature of the Premier League, and it's what Leeds United are coming up against. But having said that, Leeds have got quality as well. So there's confidence to be had. They just have to play their game like Bielsa. And the confidence that Bielsa has shown by naming the lineup.
Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt is the word you're looking for.
Mm, yeah, that was the one I was going with for sure. I stopped myself saying it, to be honest.
What's your score prediction, young Joe?
2-0 to Leeds United.
Yeah, I can see it if they score. Well, obviously, in a 2-0 win, they would score the first goal. But if Leeds score first, I could see them winning 2-0.
Hold on. You're covering your back here. I was going, well, if this happens, then this will happen. If that happens, then that'll happen.
Yeah, all right. I'm working it out.
They're not going to beat Ilan the Wall Melier. Come on.
Lemieux.
Right, was Lemieux last week.
I'm going bold then. I'm going to say 3-1 to Leeds United.
I like how I've baited you into that.
You have. You've taken the safe ground, I think. Well, the safer ground with 2-0.
I'm not sure I have. How many clean sheets do Leeds have this season? 4?
But it all depends on that first goal. That first goal is so big. It was last season. It was last season as well. It was exactly the same last season.
I think it's always going to be with the way that Leeds play, isn't it?
Yeah. And who do you reckon is going to score? Let's narrow it down.
Rodrigo Brace.
Well, in that case, I'm saying Bamford gets one. Rodrigo gets one. And Click. I'm backing Click to score every week because he's getting into positions in which he should score. And so far, he's been letting me down, mostly letting himself down, but still letting me down. But I think this is the week when he said it in our interview, he's been getting chances, he has to do better, he has to score. I think it's coming. It has to come soon. So I think I'll keep saying it until it happens, and then I'll look like a visionary when it does.
There is a serious point to be made about that they do need more goals coming from behind Bamford, don't they? So it will be nice to see players pitch in that regard, whether it's Click, Rodrigo, Harrison, Rafinha, whoever it is, that they do need more goals from behind Bamford. And Bamford seems to like scoring away from Elland Road, so it'll be interesting.
This has been episode 97 of the Inside Elland Road podcast from the Yorkshire Evening Post. Thank you very, very much for joining us. We'll be back next week.